Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
Hello, Kimberly. You look beautiful. Oh, thanks.
You are glowing.
It's, you know, it's the light. It's nothing, nothing special or anything.
No, definitely not. Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara.
And what else, Kara?
I'm pregnant. But I'm pumped. We're not burying the lead here. Straight out the gates. There's your news. There are now three of us on this podcast.
Which she decides to drop this bomb on me. While we're at Pebble Beach on our anniversary trip, I go downstairs. It's not a spa, but like the locker room area, whatever. That's where I was getting ready that day. And I'm about to put my phone away for the foreseeable future. And I get a text from her that just says, "Hey, period. You around? Can you talk? Question mark." I was like, son of a... That is not normal. There's no gift. There's no emoji. And so I'm sitting there with my phone in my hand. What is happening? What is happening? I'm just like, three texts, four texts, five texts in a row. And then I just get a picture. What is that?
You're like, what? What is this? Wait, I'm going to see if I can scroll back to these. Because it's pretty funny, honestly. Said momentarily about to go into the spa. You're making me nervous. And I sent a picture and you said, "Excuse me, what is that? What is that? Is that what I think it is? Oh my fucking God, what? Ah, hell." To which I send this.
Yeah.
For those of you who cannot see, it is Amy Poehler. I don't know if this is a real belly or a belly suit dancing.
Yeah.
Which was basically the way I announced my pregnancy to everyone in real life. I just sent them that picture and a pregnancy test, which is not like it's one of the pregnancy tests that you get when you get a box of like 100 of them.
Yeah.
So it's just like one line or two lines. If it's two lines, you're pregnant. So.
Well, and I'm like, is this COVID?
I know. Several people were like, are you COVID positive?
No.
I knew where you were at in your...
in my cycle, because you're creepy.
Cycle and talk and all that kind of stuff. But yeah. I was still like, is that what I think it is? You know the scene from Bridesmaids when Kristen Wiig goes over and Maya Rudolph announces that she's engaged and she's showing her the ring and she's like, ah, what is happening? That was me and my reaction. Because for those of you that don't know, we have four children and if I could reach my tubes, I'd tie them myself. We're in different phases.
Yeah, that's okay. It's all right. Neither of us are menstruating regularly. For very different reasons.
You're welcome.
You're welcome for that. All of our male listeners have now left the building.
Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ has entered the chat. Yeah, I am so stinking excited for you and Joe and the boys. And
I know.
I love it so much. I'm going to snuggle and FaceTime and it's going to love me.
You're going to see the bump when it's really bumping in September. I'll be like 5-ish months pregnant. I think they can hear then. So, you know, we'll just slap the little podcast headphones on the belly.
Oh my gosh.
I bet these mics could pick up like some.
Fetal heartbeat.
Sure, they're pretty. I'll put on the cloud lifter. You guys gonna hear it.
Amplify that.
It might just be some gas. I don't know. Kicks, baby heartbeats, gas. It is really, who knows?
There's a lot of different directions I could go with this right now.
I know.
Since you said we're both not menstruating. We had this conversation. Welcome back. Thank you. If you didn't already know or don't follow our social media, last week was our mid-season break. It was a great time just after Kara and I have both been gone. It was nice little reset and pause and catch up. And now we're back to our normal weekly cadence, regularly scheduled programming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was we both had a mad case of the can't works. You know, coming back from vacation, we needed a week to get our butts back in gear, basically.
Yes.
Pick up all the pieces that we just kind of haphazardly threw on the ground before we left our states and countries. And so we're back.
But you got to hear the conversation with Anna, presumably in the last episode.
And you heard us talk a little bit about how stress and trauma can impact your body in multiple ways. And I had said that I am perimenopausal. I had been to the doctor. It's all this. Part of being perimenopausal, if you didn't know, it can start early, can start late. It's just like basically the lead up to menopause. And I'm learning this as I go. So
I feel like everyone does that.
I know. Forgive me if I don't get something entirely right, but mine is stress onset. Well, we get out to our wonderful vacation that we have been planning for 18 months, and I am finally relaxed. And it hits.
Woohoo!
Oh, so great. So here's the thing, though. It's not as if I am in my hotel room. No, of course not. Mike and I are golfing at Pebble Beach for the round of our lives. I am not good. I'll also throw that out there, too. But we are golfing Pebble Beach at the turn, which is like the ninth hole. I go into the bathroom and I'm like, shit, I was not prepared for this. I have not had to worry about this in a long, long time. And so I go out to, of course, the guy that's running the little stand with snacks and stuff. I'm like, do you happen to have any female products? He just kind of looks at me. He's like, no, I have some Tylenol. I'm like, okay.
Not what I need. Thank you.
Well, I told Mike when I got out, I'm like, oh, shit. Are you going to make it through the round? No, I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. Bless his heart, he goes and tells one of the range master. I never get it right. It's one of the guys that goes around and makes sure that you're keeping pace, because for Pebble, they really want you to make sure that you're keeping up. It's a public golf course, but they're trying to get as many people through as they can. And he gave him money. That guy drove all the way to the beginning to the market, bought said tampons, and drove them all the way back out to our golf cart where we were. That could be the end of the story, and it could be like, oh, haha, because there weren't any dispensers or something in the bathroom. This is still a male-dominated sport. But no, when I first got snacks, we were told to hide the snacks in a compartment, not under your coat, not, you know, shoved in the golf cart. Hide the snacks because these birds will come out of nowhere and take your food. I'm like, oh, okay, that's weird. They're like predatory seagulls, basically. I didn't think I needed to worry about the box of tampons that's in a brown paper bag. But we go to putt and look back. There is a seagull that has gotten into our golf cart in the front little area. It has the bag in its mouth. Mike goes running. He's like, hey, hey. He's flapping his arms. He's running at the seagull who takes off. And out of this brown paper bag spills this box and all these tampons. And Mike's running after a freaking seagull, picking him up as he goes. And the visual, I like will never get it out of
like my husband of the freaking year chasing down a seagull as tampons are like flying all over the golf course.
Like, I love it.
He's great.
I was dying for a long time when, well, folks, karma is real, because very shortly thereafter, Mike got his very first hole-in-one on 17. It was on our anniversary, his first hole-in-one. I was screaming, jumping, excited. It was lovely.
I've noticed that we seem to have like, we have like undercurrents, right? That like run through our podcast, and birds.
Oh, fucking birds, man.
Have like, you know, like I had a pet pigeon. You had a seagull incident. You often carry around chicken tenders in your purse.
I do love purse.
I have 6 chicken nuggets that I love outside, and I have a keychain with the chicken nugget on it for the key to their coop. So like, you know, I guess our podcast mascot needs to be some type of bird, because apparently it's a theme here. Bob and seagulls and chickens in multiple forms.
I could go off on a whole tangent, and I'm going to reserve it. But if you didn't know, birds aren't real, and they are government spies that charge on the power line.
Stop it.
If you are not familiar with this movement, though, you should be, because it's a massive joke, obviously, online, but it's so, so freaking brilliant and just totally throws everything that the state of politics and our government does and how it pits us against each other in their faces in the most wonderful Gen Z type of way ever. So if you didn't know, look up Birds Aren't Real. Play along. It's very fun.
Switching topics after all of our chittery-trattery. Also accurate. Who's our guest this week, Kimberly?
Our guest this week is my friend, Dr. Sheena Howard. She is an all-around badass. You will hear themes throughout this episode about heroes, and she really is one.
She's so cool.
Right? Like, I want to be you when I grow up.
I know. I want to be friends with you. We are friends. You're so cool.
It's this whole other world, though, that I would have never known existed, and the space that she has carved out and demanded, not just for survivors or women or people of color, but just all around dynamic humans, is awesome. And I love the representation that she is bringing to literature, to comic books, to universities, and to education. Please, please, I am asking, follow her Instagram. It's my favorite. I love scrolling through. Like, she's just got these like mini stories that are snack size every day. Mm-hmm. And I love them so much. And she does them in a way that's very authentic to her. And you'll see what we mean as we start talking. But she's just great. And I was excited to introduce you to her too.
Yeah, it was such a fun conversation. Dr. Sheena Howard is the first Black woman to win an Eisner Award at the San Diego Comic-Con for her first book, Black Comics, Politics of Race and Representation, in 2014. The Eisner is considered the Oscars of comics.
Howard has published comic books for both Marvel and DC Comics. She's written a graphic novel and a stage play for DMC, like Run DMC, published with Bloomsbury, Chicago Review Press, Ben Bella Press, and more.
In addition, her work has received numerous book awards, including the American Library Association's Outstanding Reference Sourcebook Award and more. Her books have been featured in Good Morning America, The New York Times, The Washington Post, and more.
She's also the subject of an Emmy-nominated episode of State of the Arts. Finally, Dr. Howard writes and ghostwrites for celebrities, CEOs, and social impact companies that seek to empower, inspire, and motivate.
And now here's our conversation with Dr. Sheena Howard.
Dr. Sheena Howard, thank you so much for joining us today. We are so excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Kim knows you from your involvement with Greek Life, right?
Kinda.
Yeah, we met each other through a speakers bureau, actually, and just over some shared experiences, really hit it off. And it's so great watching all of the things that you have been accomplishing, even in the last year, because you are just growing by leaps and bounds. And I have loved watching your social media game just take off. So,
oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that one.
Yeah. Well, when Kara and I look to have guests on, we, first of all, we're starting to pull on our friends and our contacts, and knowing that we want to support so many different types of stories, I was like, ooh, just the way that you are able to speak to it in such a succinct way really caught my attention. And so I am just honored to have you in our space today and sharing the microphone and your story with our listeners, because you've got some real important stuff to say.
Awesome. I'm excited. I'm excited for sure.
Before we get into who you are, what led you to be here, we have to ask you our icebreaker question. So every week we ask our guest an icebreaker question. What is the last thing that you binged? And this is like, I don't mean binge eating.
For me, it was banana cream pie.
For me, it was gummy bears. What's the last thing that you binge consumed as far as content?
Oh my God, this is the perfect question because I am a self-help junkie. I'm talking about just the Lewis House podcast and then Alex Hormozi. I'm like the self-help junkie. But interestingly enough, I'm actually on a 30-day experiment right now. I do these experiments with myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm on a 30-day experiment right now of no self-help content, not even scrolling through Instagram. Because some people's content on Instagram is so good with motivation that you'll just be scrolling for hours. I'm a few weeks into my 30-day break from no self-help content. And because of that, I've come up with some really amazing ideas and solutions to my own problems because I'm just not listening to someone else tell me how to solve problems. And so this experiment is going really well. I do these experiments with myself. So this one is actually going really well.
So it's like a reverse binge.
Yes. So I was on the binge and then I realized that I needed to get off of this train because it wasn't helping. I was just consuming YouTube videos and audiobooks and to the point where I was like, oh my God, I'm listening to this stuff, but I'm actually not doing anything with it. I keep searching for more information instead of taking the action. And the good stuff isn't actually the action.
I love it. Kim and I were both like, oh, I know.
Right.
Kara's huge into the self-help and being able to kind of heal yourself in different capacities. And so, oh my goodness, I know you have a ton to think about now, Kara.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. All right. So would you prefer to go by Sheena or Dr. Howard?
It doesn't matter. Even when I tell people to call me Sheena, they still call me Dr. Howard. So it's really up to Sheena is fine.
Well, it is an earned title of ridiculous amounts of respect because you have worked your butt off to get there. So Yes. If it were me, I'd be like, absolutely, you're calling me doctor. My husband, Mike, will make us call him the Honorable Michael. I'm like, but.
Shout out to Mike. Tell him I said hi.
You meant the Honorable Michael Rohr?
Yes, yeah. She did.
So tell us a little bit about your background and what got you to where you are today, to your comfort level.
Trying to think about the origin point, so this is not a boring story. But in general, I did my PhD at a really young age, at 23 years old.
Wow.
Yes, I finished my PhD when I was 26. So for me, 30-year-olds in the classroom at 23, they were like old. So because I was young and actually didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life, I'm in this PhD program and they're like, you have to write a dissertation. And because I'm just young and reading comic strips, I did a dissertation on comic strips, which was completely unheard of in the academic world at that time, because this is 2007. And I'm like, what? So because I did that dissertation on comic strips, I ended up writing my first book on race and gender representation in comics. And it just so happened that that book won a major award at San Diego Comic-Con. And so I became the first Black woman to win an Eisner Award, which is considered the Oscars of comics. And I start with that origin point because I think that story really just sums up who I've always been, because I've always been the one kind of moving at my own beat, right? And that has always put me a little bit on the outskirts of what everybody else was doing. So if everybody was going left, I might not have been going right, but I was going straight. I was just going in my own direction. That is still who I am today. I try to put things out in the world that are going to be empowering for people and different and new, and the things that I know would be empowering for me. And so I think that kind of sums up where I am today with all the things I'm doing as well. From there, a lot of things branch out and we can get into that, but I think that's a great starting point.
So because we are Survivor's Guide to True Crime, tell us a little bit about your story as a survivor.
Yeah. So when I was 26, I moved back to Philadelphia, where I am from, because I got a job as a full-time professor and I bought a house. So all of this sounds great. It sounds like I'm on top of the world as a 26-year-old with a house, moving back to where my family is from, starting this amazing job, the youngest person in an academic program. However, I was really sad, but I did not recognize it because I was supposed to be happy, right? Because I didn't recognize it, but I also was really smart. So I thought I was self-aware. I was in a really, I don't want to say dark and depressed, but not in a good space. I felt like actually I had went all around the world and did all these amazing things just to come back where I started. And I was a failure because I never really viewed Philadelphia as that great of a place. Because of that, I had self-esteem issues that I wasn't aware of. Like just this big ball of just lack of awareness is the only way I can describe it. And I was just reading a study today that 90% of people think they are self-aware when really only actually 10% of people are. So I was in that 90%. In that space of where I was, I met my ex. So I am not self-aware and actually dealing with all of these not good things, thinking I'm aware, attracting this person. I say it like that because this is hindsight talking, because had I been in a better place, my ex wouldn't even have existed to me. Like I just would have repelled that type of person. So when people say you attract what you are, today I do believe that. And I have to preface this when I say that because I don't want people to, I'm not saying it's your fault that you are a victim of abuse, right? It's not my fault that my ex was a toxic abuser. But if I was in a better place, I would have never entered that relationship in the first place, right? So now I am at a new level of awareness looking back at who I was. And so that's kind of what happened. From the beginning, there were red flags, but I didn't recognize it then because my self-esteem wasn't where it needed to be. And I was unhappy thinking that I was okay.
From that point, something you just said really resonated where you think you're self-aware. And because of that, you are willing to open yourself up to people that you wouldn't normally talk to. How did that initial breakdown start? Because they're never red flags. They're maybe pink. Pink's my favorite color. Of course, I love pink flags.
Yeah. But
we don't think of them immediately as red flags. Now, in hindsight, we can look at them that way. But they get you to a point where you're going to be colorblind either way. So whatever flags they're throwing out,
that's
you're
right,
not going to recognize. What do you think that looked like to you?
So when I look back, the first date, my ex was late and smelled like weed. Like, and I thought it was cute. Like, right? Like, why would I think that was cute? And I remember the first night, like I slept over her house. When we woke up that morning, she turned and looked at me like this and said, ew. Like, that's what I woke up to. She said, ew.
Oh,
right. And that was at the very beginning. I'm talking about like at the very beginning. And then you know what happened? I called her out on it and she made me breakfast and brought it to bed. And immediately that negative thing that she did turned to like, oh my gosh, she's so sweet. She brought me breakfast. Nobody's ever like brought me breakfast in bed. It's just like that ability to be able to erase the pink flag, as you say, really shows you the power of the human brain. Like I today where I stand, I'm like, yo, your brain is so powerful. It can rationalize something really awful into thinking it's something good. And respecting the power of your brain, I think, is so important because I am smart enough to rationalize anything. And I have to understand that about myself so that I don't find myself in that situation ever again.
I am smart enough to rationalize anything. What a perfect way to put that, especially when you think you're so self-aware, right? Like we're doing all of this work on ourselves to better heal or understand the impact that we have on people around us. We must be in an okay state until we realize we're not. And I think the other thing that you can start to rationalize, which I'm sure you found, is that you can help other people at the same time as you are being harmed.
Yes.
Talk about the intersection of your work during this time and what you were putting out, what you were capable of, what you were producing, while also this is your home life.
So that was also part of the problem. Because I am so into my work and because I have very good coping mechanisms, and this is the crazy part, two sides of a coin. I have very good coping mechanisms and I know how to release negative feelings. I do that through writing. I do that through speaking. I do it through working out. All of those things are very good coping mechanisms to deal with tough situations. So when my ex was just super toxic all day long, and again, you're not abused every day. Like some days were the most amazing days ever. And you're like, wow, why can't every relationship be like this? And then there are the days where it's just complete utter emotional and physical abuse. But on those days when it was really bad, I was able to just go deeper into my work. So I wrote 2 books in 1 year. I did an entire documentary. I did so much and I was able to ignore what was happening in the house because I was releasing that negativity through my work. But when I look back, I accomplished so much, but I could have accomplished so more if I did not have that negative. It, like the work allowed me to run away from the abuse. Like I remember one night it got so bad, I left the house and slept in my office at work and woke up and went and taught my class. I left the night before, slept in my office to get away from my abuser and woke up. And it's like, man, that's how bad it was.
Something that hit me and I wrote down is when you said, we are really good at rationalizing something awful into something good. And I just think of
how that is a superpower that we as women have. It's not always for our best interest. We do this with our own safety. We do this in relationships. It's also this idea that, like you said, you're not abused every day, and it's those good days that keep you there.
Yeah, it's a good day. So the good days are really good, but that's part of the emotional roller coaster that a toxic person wants you on so that they can destabilize you, right? This is all about you're on their cycle of mood swings, not your normal cycle of stability. That piece with being able to rationalize anything was compounded for me because I have empathy. Like I can put myself in someone else's shoes and feel what they feel. Now this might sound next level, but it's just true. For my family, if I'm in a car with a family member and my mom says that she feels motion sickness, I don't get motion sickness in the car, but my mom says she feels motion sickness, I will feel it. I will feel what I will literally feel what she's feeling. Same thing with my son. Because of that, I could feel and put myself in my ex's shoes, even though what she was doing was wrong to me. So this is how I can feel like everything is my fault when I am being abused. And abusers are, you know, very good at making you feel like everything is your fault. Now, today where I sit, I understand that I have that level of empathy that I can go to. And so I've put boundaries around it. I really would have to talk to myself like, okay, you're not experiencing the motion sickness. I have to talk myself through it. And today the boundaries are so good where I don't experience that because I have boundaries, but that is the person I was then. After I understood that about myself, I saw the empathy as a weakness. I actually resented it for a little bit. But today I use it as a superpower because I write books for celebrities and CEOs and social impact companies, and I ghostwrite. So I tell their stories. I write narrative nonfiction books. And my cutting edge in terms of a writer is that empathy. Mm-hmm. I can really understand your story and speak in your voice as a ghostwriter because of that empathy. So now I don't see it as a weakness. It is the strength that it should be, but I have boundaries around it in terms of the places where it is not safe for me to let that empathy be there.
Which takes a long time to create and practice. I think that's the biggest thing. It's not just my boundaries are here and now we're fine. It's a practice and it's constant that you have to maintain those and to keep them healthy, because if they're not, people will always try to take advantage of that, especially when you have an empathetic person. That's somebody that is typically targeted when you have abusive relationships. They are looking for somebody who's going to feel sorry for them and can put themselves in their shoes. It's easier to manipulate someone who will feel bad for them. What was the point for you throughout this relationship? Because when we look at statistics, partners will try to leave at least 7 times before it sticks. Mm-hmm. And not to be a leading question, I had seen this on your Instagram recently about where you were lying on the couch and the thoughts that you had there. But tell us about the time that you finally got to that was that breaking point.
Yes. Yeah, so in my mind, I was trying to leave, right? So you're trying to leave in your mind, and your mind is just screwed up because you're in this abuse and the walls are closing in and they've isolated you from your family. So I had all of that, isolated from my family, you know, all of that. And the time that I physically, even just sleeping in my office was like leaving. That was a part, that was the process of leaving, right? Just sleeping somewhere else. But the time where I left, I remember the exact day because it was on my birthday. It was on my birthday. My ex comes home drunk. Right? Instead of just leaving, she was passed out on the bed. I went and told her I'm leaving. See, this is where the abuse is, like you're still trying to take care of the abuser. And I went and told this drunk person that, hey, I'm leaving you. That's it. And then she basically attacked me. Like she, right? When they say like leaving is the most dangerous time. Yeah, she attacked me in the middle of the night. Like I'm running to the car with my infant in my arms. And I guess the universe was looking out for me because at that moment, a police car drove up the street. Like at the very moment where in my head, I'm like, what am I going to do to get out of this situation? She's about to harm me, take the baby. Mind you, she had no clothes on. She just had a bathrobe on with no clothes under. And a police car is driving up the street. So you know, I flagged the police officer down and he helped me get away. And then the question's like, okay, so where do I go now? I'm a whole college professor. I have a pretty good platform. I make really good money, but I literally have nowhere to go. And you know, nowhere to go in terms of my own place to go. I went to my mother's house, right? We slept on a couch. You know, I talk about this in my book, Nina's Whisper, where it's a fiction book, but it's first person, right? It's a fictionalized retelling of what happened. I'm just like, yo, how did I get here? I'm on my mom's couch. That was a whole nother set of issues of shame, of guilt. I'm a failure. I let my mom down. She did not work this hard for me to end up here. Then the entire divorce process of trying to divorce a toxic person that will not let you divorce them is, I mean, I hate to say that was worse than it was still abuse, right? It's
yeah, we just talked in the last episode too about how people who are abusing or stalking or whatever will utilize the justice system to gain access to you again.
You hit the nail on the head though. It is a prolonged sense of abuse.
You know, for me, the family court system was an institution that enabled the abuser to continue abusing me even though I had physically left. I can't compare living with the abuser to like going through that situation, but it was really bad and it's really expensive to divorce an abuser that has money, right? Because they can just prolong it. They can keep you in it. They can keep you in it. That's how I ended up with $0 in my bank account. Nothing. I got wiped out every single penny I had. I was literally a college professor driving Instacart. And it is when I drove Instacart that my mom was like, oh, you really don't have any money. And so this is a same-sex marriage, right? I was smart enough to understand that I wasn't going to let her adopt my son. I always call my son the hero for me. Like he saved me because it was my son that actually helped me get out because I wouldn't do it for myself. I did not think enough of myself to leave that relationship. My son is the catalyst here. So I didn't let her adopt him. And adoption is the only legal way that a same-sex partner who is not related to a child can legally be the child's parent, or so I thought. The courts actually ended up giving her custody through something called in loco parentis, which is not supposed to be used for this. It's not supposed to be used for that reason. And so that's what happened. And I ended up being stuck with my ex, who's not related to my child. It took me 5 years to get divorced. It took me 5 years to get. I filed for a divorce 1 month after I left, and it took me 5 years to get divorced through the courts. She would just not show up to hearings. And then they would say, oh, she didn't show up. We'll reschedule. Same thing for custody. Just would show up without the paperwork she was supposed to have. And they'd say, oh, you know, come back with the paperwork next time. It's just...
And down the road.
Yeah. And so that's how it went.
So there's this element of coercive control to what the courts are allowing abusers to do and emboldening them to do within this family system.
Yes. And so I'm really glad that my attorney told me to get child support, because I think this is an area that is worth talking about, because I was so over it and so over going to court. I did not want to add another thing to go to court for. So I was like, I don't want the money. I don't. And my lawyer was like, you want to get child support. You know, it's just an added expense for me because now I got to pay the lawyer. She just didn't show up to the child support hearings. And at one point, they were like, oh, well, we can't get child support until she actually gets entered into the system. And since she's not showing up, there's nothing we could do. They were mailing things to her house and she just wouldn't respond. So I had to pay externally a private person to deliver the child support order in order for the courts to do anything. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't get child support until she basically decided to come in.
And can you imagine if the roles were reversed and you didn't show or you didn't have the correct paperwork, how quickly that would be held against you?
Exactly. Exactly. And so I ended up doing what I had to do to see that through. But it was expensive. I'm talking about, I spent over $200,000. I stopped counting at $200,000 on this divorce, because between the child support, the custody, the divorce, and her just not showing up and just doing what she wanted to do, showing up in the courtroom with like Gatorades and chips late. And, you know, sometimes the judges would tell her that was inappropriate. But for the most part, I just learned that everything that I thought about the system is wrong. The little writing that they write on the court orders about if you don't show up, you'll be fined or thrown into jail. They're just words on paper. It's none of It's not true. And it was really disappointing. You know, even when my ex would show up to my house drunk, I got two orders of protection. My ex would show up to the house drunk, not supposed to be near me at all. The police would show up an hour later. One officer just laughed at me when they got there. I just learned that you're really on your own when it comes to a person that really wants to abuse you. Unfortunately, and I don't say this to be like, I want to give people hope, but you know, I had to hire my own private security. I talk about this on my Instagram. I still have my own private security today. That's not going to change. So I had to do what I had to do. And all of that led me to understanding the importance of money. Because before that, I didn't really think about money. Whatever my job paid me, I was okay with. That's fine. You know, I'd spend money, just didn't really think about it. But it really taught me the importance of money because I need to have a financial setup where nothing can ruin me financially, no matter what it is. I'm not going to ever go through a situation like that. But money is super important because if I didn't have the money and the money from my family, from my mom that helped me financially pay for all of this, I wouldn't have been able to get through it in the way that I eventually got through it. I definitely wouldn't have the child support because I wouldn't have been able to afford to pay the lawyer to keep going to court to get that. What I learned is that even just the way I thought about money was tied to my self-esteem and self-worth as well. That is just one of the lessons that it taught me. And we can talk about that a little bit.
That's what I was just going to say. I think when it comes to something like this, you're so intrinsically woven with the cost of doing this. And are you worth this cost? And people can so easily tie a financial dollar sign to it, that at what point am I as a human being not worth it? And we are showed over and over again by a court system, they don't value that. They don't value a protective parent. And the more education that we can get around these things with judges, with court systems, is that going to start changing in favor of victims and protective parents? But we're not there yet.
Right.
We're light years away still.
We are not there yet. And, you know, just random things would happen. Like I would come out and my tire would be slashed. Could have just been random, but could have been my ex because I'm going through this crazy situation. Law enforcement didn't want to look at any of the cameras on the block to see who did it, right? It's just like there's no help from the system that you think is supposed to help you.
Yep.
We are so thankful for all of your support. We're also supported by Cured. They are a supplement company that is changing the industry standard for how supplements are made. They are products that I use every day that have genuinely changed my life. Kara, of course, is the one who introduced me to them, and I was a little hesitant at first, but I can say after using their products for the last couple of months, I'm hooked. My favorites that I think everyone should try and will love are the Serenity, Zen, and Rise. Serenity gummies have ashwagandha, L-theanine, and CBD. They're going to help you to just relax, take the edge off at the end of a long day or whenever you need it. Zen is going to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep soundly. Hallelujah. And Rise is going to give you sustained energy and focus without caffeine or without a crash.
I was really hesitant to try anything I view as a sleep aid, but I can say after incorporating Zen into my nighttime routine, I am getting such better sleep.
Yes. And for all of our listeners, you can use code KARA10, go to curednutrition.com or go to the link in our show notes to take you straight to the website. We hope that you love it as much as we do.
Now, do you feel in hindsight or at the time, do you feel like you were believed when it came to disclosing what had happened to you?
No, absolutely not. In fact, when I went to get the order of protection, when I went before the judge, the first thing the judge said to me, are you doing this to help with custody? Like, are you serious? I literally had to beg this person for my life because she threatened to stab me with a knife and held it over the tip of my head. She's showing up at my house drunk. The neighbors are calling the cops, screaming, banging on the door. I'm coming out. My tires are being slashed, sending me all these crazy messages. And the judge's first question, without any context of my life, without hearing any evidence, are you doing this to help you with custody? The lawyer that I had, actually Women Against Abuse here in Philadelphia, shout out to them. They represented me. They help you with getting the order of protection. It doesn't cost you anything. When I told him that the judge said that to me, he was like, she said that? Yeah, that's what she said. But I ended up getting the order of protections because the Woman Against Abuse lawyer talked to my ex on my behalf and got her to sign the papers without having to go before the judge, which is actually good because clearly the judge's perspective was that she didn't believe me before I even opened my mouth.
Right. Well, and then the follow-up to that, even though you were not believed, do you feel like there was a disparity or a difference in how you were treated because you're a Black woman in a same-sex marriage with an infant?
Yeah, the courts, just the whole thing, the courts were totally confused. There was so much going on with the courts. At first, they told me I couldn't get child support because she wasn't the legal parent. Obviously, she didn't adopt him. Because my lawyer was like, well, just go get child support. And then I went to child support and they're like, she's not the parent. One system was telling me she was a parent. And then the child support people were telling me she wasn't. It's just unbelievable. Actually,
it's like they're not talking to each other, but they're definitely making you work for it. And at the end of the day, not caring about your voice. I think that alone is going to resonate with a lot of people because they don't know where to turn. It is such a foreign system. And there are so many different agencies and players involved in that system that the worst part of it is that you can't speak out. You can't talk about it while you're in it because it's not just about you anymore. It's about your child. Right. And for those protected, they want to make sure that they are maintaining their child's privacy. But that's, you're never going to hear about it.
It's just a whole cycle of abuse. I know, because when I was going through the divorce and stuff, I didn't want to tell my story because I don't want this to screw up my custody case. But I'm like, people need to hear this story because, you know, my story is someone else's survival guide. And this is happening, and particularly for the LGBTQ community, where the law is a gray area and nobody really knows what's going on in terms of, okay, I was married to this woman. She did not adopt this child. We all know that there is a legal remedy to this, which is adoption. They kind of just piecemealed this stuff together. Just give me clarity, folks. I was married to a woman, so you can't say I'm like anti-LGBTQ people, but I know that in heterosexual relationships, people are not getting custody of children that don't legally adopt them and that have multiple issues. I'm talking about multiple issues my ex has. Just get it together. That's all I ask.
In the nicest terms. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that when we spoke last, you said that this ruling that they made was case law created, correct?
So here's the thing. The judge never gave me an explanation. In loco parentis is generally and historically used if, let's say, one parent is on drugs or something, right? They can't raise the child. And a grandparent wants to step in and be in standing of that parent, right? This happens a lot because of the drug crisis, right? Grandparents are stepping in and getting legal custody of kids to raise them because this other person has all, the biological parent has all of these issues. This is what in loco parentis is supposed to be used for. There are a bunch of different factors that you have to meet. Lawyers told me this person that gets in loco parentis has to live with the child for 6 months. That's generally the unspoken standard and take care of the child. We lived with my ex for 8 weeks. Okay. And my ex was not taking care of my son. So the thing that bothers me is the judge didn't give me an explanation. The order was like a paragraph. And the finding is your ex has in loco parentis. I'm going to speak out about this because there's a legal remedy to this. And we should just make sure people understand what's happening.
So what did it look like for you as you're going through this 5-year long process of trying to be free from this person? How did you find yourself trying to re-find yourself and your voice during that time?
Yeah, it was really tough. It's, you know, still having to do these custody exchanges with my son during this time, knowing this person is doing these things. It was really, really tough. The only thing I can say is that I really just leaned into Buddhism. Buddhism just helped me stay grounded in terms of understanding that this is not the end of my story. This is not the end of the story. And just helping me get some of my power back in terms of understanding that the future is not created yet. Things change. You don't know what can happen. You're going through this now, but this is not what your life is always going to look like. Understanding the difference between fear and intuition is something that I had to learn. Part of the custody exchanges is that my ex had to do this. This is really absurd what I'm about to tell you. I don't think I ever publicly said this, but part of the custody exchanges during this period was my ex had to breathe into a breathalyzer. And she had to pass the breathalyzer before I gave my son over to her, right? But listen, I had to administer the breathalyzer on her.
What?
Yes. I had to pay for the breathalyzer.
No, ma'am.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Exactly. This was what was court ordered of me. And every time she failed the breathalyzer, obviously she went ballistic. It was tough. And this went on for years. Yeah. And my son was little. When I'm talking about little, like he wasn't even walking. And there are just parts of this that I just cannot control. And I just have to have some sort of faith in something that somebody is protecting this little boy. Because that's literally all I had. And delineating between intuition and fear, because sometimes I would pull up to the exchange and I would get a really fearful feeling. Like, oh my God, if something really bad is going to happen to him if I do this exchange. And just reminding myself that that's fear, that's not intuition. Because intuition, I believe, is a real thing. Intuition does guide you. But the what I figured out, at least for me, is that fear tells you not to do something. Intuition tells you to do something. And this has been important for me in my just career as well. If I'm scared to write that book, if I'm scared to post something on Instagram, whatever it is, fear is preventative. Intuition tells you the direction to go. I had to develop that, and I developed that. I think I'm better for it. I think I learned the lessons that I was supposed to learn. That experience with going through this was not in vain. I definitely am using it to empower other people. I am a better person for it. I wish I learned these lessons without that. If I had to do it all over again, I would choose not to have went through that situation. But when I look back, I don't know if I could have got out of that dark hole I was in without some intervention. I definitely would not have had my son if it wasn't for her, because I was so mentally messed up. She convinced me to have a baby in order to stay in the relationship. That's how jacked up I was. I would not have him if it wasn't for her. I understand that abusers do things like get you to have kids and get you to be married so they can keep you locked in. But I'm so happy that I have my son. So I would not have a kid if it wasn't for her. Just trying to find the good parts of what happened.
So let's talk about the fact that throughout this lifetime of yours, you've had this constant theme of superheroes. And sometimes they're an idea, and sometimes they seem to be an embodiment. And it's not just you who is becoming your own superhero. You're also raising a mini superhero. Talk to us about your parenting now with the knowledge that you already have about how you're approaching this whole parenting journey.
Yeah. The first thing is honesty. I can't sugarcoat things with my son with this complex situation. You know, his life is different than a lot of people. And so just being honest. And honest in a kid-appropriate way, but honest. I know some people, they go through divorces and they protect the other person. Let's say just a normal, non-toxic relationship, right? You go through a divorce, women a lot of times will protect the father. Let's say the father doesn't show up, right? They'll make an excuse for him, right? They don't want to make the father look bad sometimes. I'm just honest with him because that's the only way I can be, because not being honest with him is not going to help him. I think I just lead from that place. I also really support him in expressing himself, really support him in sharing his feelings, whether that's verbally or through writing or through drawing. I think that he's going to have to be super confident, you know, and I'm still trying to figure out ways to make sure that he's confident. That's going to be important because, you know, he's a little guy, but he has a complex situation because of my poor decisions, right? This is what it is. Kids pay for the mistakes that you made before they were born. That's important for people to understand. Your kid is going to pay for the mistakes that you made before they came into this world. And I didn't think about it like that.
Well, and they didn't ask to be put in this situation. It's not their responsibility to fix it. It's ours to help them and give them the tools to navigate it as best as possible.
Right, right. When he was in my stomach, I'm like, I'm not letting her adopt him. Like, this chick is not adopting this boy. So in my mind, I was okay. I was like, I'm not going to let her adopt him. I can just leave. Yo, that is not what happened. So, yeah.
I love thinking about the intuition and fear and how you talked about it with your career. So tell us about some of the intuitive things that you have done to take power over your career and what you've been doing.
Yeah, once I kind of figured this hack out for me in terms of the difference between intuition and fear, I'm just able to move a lot more confidently. And I have a system that works when I'm experiencing fear. Because if you can't overcome the fear, you can't get to the good stuff, right? The success is on the other side of fear. I just wrote a stage play for DMC from Run DMC, right? This legendary hip hop group. And I had his email address for a while. And I was like, I'm not going to email him. The day that I need to email him, I'll know. right? I'll know because intuition will tell me to do that thing. So it wasn't fear because intuition said, no, you are going to email him, but you're going to do it when the time is right. And one day I woke up and it was like, it's time to email DMC. And I emailed him and I told him I wanted to write for him. And you know what he said? Oh my God, your timing is so amazing. And I was like, in my mind, I was like, yeah, I know. Like in my mind, I'm like, yeah, of course. Like intuition told me, right? Yeah, that's kind of my metric for understanding the difference between the two.
Yes. Okay, talk to us about why Wakanda matters, because I see this all over Instagram especially. I love the concept of it, but it may be something foreign to those of us who don't always consume comics.
Yes.
And, you know, only have seen the Marvel Universe.
Oh, I'm glad you asked me about that because my book, Why Wakanda Matters, was just a clue on Jeopardy. And I am like a bee. Oh, my goodness.
That's so cool.
Bee Jeopardy.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I know. I'm still in shock. So yeah, Why Wakanda Matters, I published in 2021. And it's about what the film Black Panther can actually teach us about mental health. So through the themes of the film and what the film was about, just looking at these psychological theories specific to the African-American community and what we can learn from it, like racial identity development, theories around collective identity and female empowerment and all of that good stuff. Yeah, I'm really proud of that book. We did a dedication to Chadwick Boseman, who's the lead actor that passed away a couple of years ago. And I'm you know, I believe in it's really important to promote your books continuously. Some people will publish a book and after 3 months, they're not talking about it anymore. I still promote books that I published in 2014 because you never know who's watching. Yeah. So Why Wakanda Matters is out. Go get it. It's doing well. People love it. It's got some great reviews online. And again, it was a clue on Jeopardy. So
yeah, it was on Jeopardy.
Somebody's paying attention.
That's so cool.
So how many books now have you published?
I do not know. It's a lot. I've published, people ask me that question and maybe I should just go back and get an answer. I publish a book a year every year since 2014, but that doesn't include comic book issues that I've written for Marvel, DC, Lion Forge. That doesn't include books that I've written for clients. I just co-wrote a book with my client. It's her book. It's called 7 Steps for Building a $1 Billion Network. And so when people ask me how many books I've written, the way I answer that is not the books that I've written for other people. It's my books, but it's a lot. It's just a lot.
Yes. Well, and one of the things I saw that I loved was that you have 0 books on your computer right now that you haven't published.
I don't play those games.
Yeah.
That's right. So,
but I love the mentality behind them.
Yeah, a lot of writers, they talk about how they got stuff on their computer. And I'm like, what? Why isn't it out in the world? What did you... I don't believe in wasting time either. So if I wrote the book, it's going to be published.
I love it.
It's not going to sit on my... It's not doing anybody any justice by sitting on... Writing and creating something is a gift to the world. People don't have to accept that gift. They don't have to read it. They don't have to buy it. But it is your gift to the world.
Ugh, I love that. Creating any kind of art is a gift. And most importantly, it's a gift to yourself.
Exactly.
I know that there's so many things that I didn't even hit on because we didn't get nearly into all of the amazing Marvel and just the vast body of work that you have put into the world, that you have contributed to the world, to other survivors, to people who are saving up their pennies to buy comic books, that they want to see people like them represented. Not only did you write a dissertation on it, but you changed the damn industry and you made it happen.
Thank you.
And that is something that I love and adore about you. And the fact that no one knew that this was going on behind the scenes is just a testament to your strength and the strength of survivors everywhere. The things that we are able to put into the world, despite being victimized at the same time, imagine if we weren't being victimized, what would we be capable of doing? Mm-hmm. And I love how much you've already done and can't wait to see what else you're doing. So for our listeners, tell us about how we can best support you because we want all of our listeners, our audience to go forth to support you, to support your son, because I know he's now a little mini author as well.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So I want my TED Talk to go viral. It actually has so many views, but I want you to watch my TED Talk, 3 Truths of Self-Empowerment That Will Set You Free.
Yes.
It touches on a lot of things that we talked about today. I want you to follow me on Instagram, Dr. Sheena Howard, because that's where I give all my good stuff, right? Mm-hmm. That's where I'm practicing my storytelling with the carousels. And then if you have a story to tell and you need help writing it, reach out to me. I am expensive, but if you're in that target audience and you want to change the world, I could definitely help you get your story out into the world.
You're expensive because you're worth it.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yes. And because you don't keep books on your computer.
Yes. Yeah.
No. Yes. My website is SheenaCHoward.com. SheenaCHoward.com. You can get to it through DrSheenaHoward.com too. So DrSheenaHoward is all of my handles. That's my website. And please hit me up. Introduce yourself to me.
Yes. Well, we will include all of these in show notes as well. Make sure that you are following, supporting this work that is so crucial. You've got so much to share with everyone, and I can't wait for them to learn who you are, what you're about, and what you're going to do in the future.
Thank you.
I feel like I am like listening to this podcast. I've just been sitting here like, this is so fun. Like, I've just been enjoying it. I'm like, sorry, I forgot that this is my job. Like,
that's good.
Oh, sorry, I have things to do here. I just have like my little fidget thing.
That's the best job. That's good.
Well, I got to have this conversation over drinks a year ago to some point. And so I know it's like so much that you could go down so many different avenues. All of them are so crucially important. And
yeah,
just thank you for taking the
time. Thank you.
And sharing. So
I'm so glad you reached out to me. I appreciate it. I love talking about this stuff. I know it helps people. I know it helps people, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to just help people.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain. If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show. To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com. Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.